In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Socialism is the parasite that lives off the back of capitalism. Like a blood-sucking tick, it lives only because there is a host to feed from. Or maybe a better analogy is socialism is some horrid alien parasite attempting to control the mind of its host. And alien is right. It's not natural for you to want to give up your God-given rights, but they convince you it's a good thing, that giving it control over your life will be better for you than if you controlled your own life. Now, think of that. When does a parasite ever do what's right and best for its host? It may not want to kill it outright, because then it would have to find another host, but it always has what's best for itself in mind, not its host. And if one of the other must die, guess which one the parasite sees as expendable. Welcome. So glad you're joining us here today on the iSpy Radio Show. We are teeing up the election today and what's at stake, as we will take a special dive today into socialism and its spread in America and right here, especially in Oregon. And we've just lived a grand in-your-face period of socialism, as we had just a mere taste of what they can and will do to you, your family, your place of work, and every aspect of your life if you give them half a chance. COVID. COVID was the excuse to seize control, and they would have gone even further if heroic, and I mean that sincerely, heroic people had not stood up and said, no, not here, not me, not my family, not my business, no. And you're not sticking me with that so-called vaccine either. No. In my youth, when a government screamed, you must do X, saying not just no, but hell no, would have been the default position. I think that should always be the default position. But today's youth are radical conformists. They will obey and demand others must conform to their fears and weird, confused beliefs about reality. I hope coming out of this, as more of the lies are exposed, they will embrace the hell no position even more so than my generation. That would be good for America. That would be good for the world. Kids and adults need to ask, why are they being manipulated? Who is doing it? And for what reasons? What do they hope to gain by seizing control? When someone wants to control you, it's always for their good, their goals. It's not for you. It's not for your good. Just like that parasite. You don't love someone if you want to control every aspect of their life. That's not love. Control is born from fear, from envy, from jealousy. Control is hate, not love. And socialists want to control every aspect of your life. They love themselves more than you, and they won't be happy until they have more control of your life than you do. Oh, they'll say they care about you. That's the lie they use to convince you to give up control over your own life. It's time to wake up and see them for who they really are. I'd like to welcome back Dennis Lithcomb. He is Oregon's senator for District 28. That's in the Klamath Falls area, although it's much larger than that, as I'm sure his odometer can no doubt testify to. Dennis, it's great to talk to you again.
You bet. It's always fun to talk to you guys. We should do it more often, but I hear today you and I are going to be on the horn here for the full hour.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we got talking to you last time. It was just, I think, 6 weeks or so ago when we last talked to you. But we got talking afterwards, and you said that you would really like to come on to talk about the move towards socialism going on here in Oregon. And we thought that was a great idea, given that Oregon is often the leader for such things. We used to say Oregon is the petri dish of leftist policies, but now I think it's more apropos to say it's the Wuhan lab of leftist politics. They're experimenting with it here before they will infect other areas. So why don't you start the discussion with kind of a broad overview of socialism here in Oregon and what people should be especially alarmed about, and perhaps what you're personally especially worried about?
You know, one, I'm worried about the whole thing. What we see in society at large, what we see within education, within the public domain, within government policy, is we see a tangibly nefarious effort to move people from their individual perspectives to a collective perspective. Mm-hmm. In 1964, Clarence Carson wrote a book about this that he called it The Fateful Turn from Individualism to Collectivism. And this move towards collectivism, we can all get together, we can all be tolerant of each other and whatnot, is basically a lie, because you and I are unique individuals. You have unique set of fingerprints. You have different characteristics. You and I are in nowhere equal, not in size, shape, weight, mental acuity, math skills, skills at the radio control board. We are entirely different.
Yes.
And to pretend that all of a sudden we can just say, oh, but everybody's equal, and therefore you should get the job, even though I'm more qualified in the math realm to build the bridge than you are. I've been in general contracting. I've been in construction. I've done those things. Boom, you get the job because of some other immutable asset.
Yeah.
So this collective mindset leads to what we started the question with, which is socialism. We are now going to socially solve our problems instead of individually rise to the occasion and right. solve our problems. It sounds like you had something you wanted to say.
Well, I was just going to say, I think what you're really zeroing in on is so much of what drives socialism, which is that stripping away of individuals, of individual rights, of individual thinking. You don't have rights, individual rights granted to you from God. They are instead collective rights. That's really the main problem.
And the collective mindset is really dangerous. Look at how it infects what we call, quote, public health. If an individual has syphilis, it's a personal health problem. It's a personal health responsibility issue. It's a personal health failure on his part or her part. And we should deal with it at the individual level, the doctor with the right diagnosis, with the right medications at the right time. We have transformed that individual action from the tragic circumstance where it occurs into, quote, a public health problem. And now that it's a public health problem, we're looking for, quote, vaccines or Gardasil or whatever, and these kinds of things to solve problems, because young men and women may be sexually promiscuous or irresponsible. But that issue about irresponsible and promiscuity, those two things come from a family setting.
Yeah.
And the family setting has to be intact to tackle those issues. The public health bureaucracy, the guy in the white lab coat shuffling papers all day long, cannot solve that problem associated with personal responsibility.
No.
So socialism...
And that's really the big problem there is, of course, they're absolving individual responsibility, and instead making everybody they're making the state being responsible for the collective rather than for individuals being responsible for themselves, which of course means that in order to do that, the individuals must give up control to the state. All right, let's go and take a break there. We are really just getting warmed up here talking about the attacks on Oregonians here through socialism. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Senator Dennis Lynn to come. And welcome back. We're talking with State Senator Dennis Lithicum today about socialism being pushed on Oregonians and the dangers that presents. We started off talking about the societal aspects of socialism, which of course is a huge part of it. To get you to adopt a socialism and to give up your freedoms and rights, they must convince you that the current situation is bad, that individuality is bad. Because under socialism, society is responsible for the individual rather than the individual responsible for themselves. And Dennis, moving our discussion forward, I really see socialism or Marxism at work in four broad areas: undermining and destroying society. And we've kind of touched on that already. I'd like to develop that a little bit more. Economics, in the sense of constant government interference, meddling with businesses on both micro and macro levels. The environment, laws and regulations, but also massive funding operations there. And finally, they take over healthcare as they control businesses through environmental laws. They control people through healthcare regulations.
But I'd like to zero in on that society umbrella. There's a lot that we could fit under here, but you've got the notion of education, the attempts to change the language and outlooks on things, crime, law and order. Why don't you go ahead and pick where you'd like to go on the societal level?
Well, I think all of this boils down to, at the societal level, there is Ludwig von Mises in the mid-40s wrote about this. He called socialists destructionists. Mm-hmm. And the reason they're destructionists is not necessarily because they want to destroy, you know, the U.S., but that they believe, quote-unquote, in the Marxist ideology that says the economic beauty that has been created within a free market society, the number of people that have been enriched, the number of lives that have been changed, the amount of higher education, medical care, transportation, freeways, airplanes, you know, in our lifetime, 3 years ago, you could fly to Rome and spend 2 weeks in Rome and you would have a great little vacation. In today's world, you know, is it a vaccine passport? Is it a vaccine? How many days do you have to sit in quarantine before you get there? Oh, that's over now. But none of these governments are willing to give up their power. Mm-hmm. And so the destruction of all these things, von Mises said, they are destructionists because they don't believe in the traditional use of capital resources to build capital goods. And by capital goods, he didn't only mean men and machines and factory, but he meant homes and all of the beauty that stems from our own endeavors and return on investment and efficiency and those kinds of things. Now, if you no longer believe in efficient economic choices, then you can launch onto climate policy or public health care, universal care. It's your right. It's your gift from your neighbor's house to your house. You can forgive all the loans and whatnot. You can go down that entire economic domain. You could lock people into their homes for the COVID tragedy because you no longer believe in the traditional economic model that says we will utilize our resources in the most appropriate, most efficient way possible. They are taking the word appropriate and saying it's more appropriate to give our money away, but you can only give away so much. And then you've got to drain the piggy bank and go to the credit card, and the credit card won't last forever. We're $31 trillion in debt. $31 trillion in debt. Trillion has 12 zeros after it. 31, comma, 000, comma, 000, comma, 000. Take a breath, comma, 000. And it's just this enormous number, and nobody in the public realm seems to mind one bit.
No,
that's what destructionism is, and yes, that's what they're doing to our culture and our society.
I think that's the real key point, is people just don't seem to care anymore. I mean, yeah, we're $31 trillion in debt. We're never going to get out of it, so what? A large part of what's going on here is that we've had socialism creeping in with all of this massive spending and everything else that's going on. But here within the broader sense of the society, two of the big attacks I see happening here in Oregon, one is education. We are literally failing our kids. But as with so many changes to the English language that the socialist likes to do, they've changed failing to graduating. We graduate kids now with no competency requirements, and also we see attacks on the family constantly, and part of which is being done through the education system. You've got things like school-based health centers and stuff. You can literally send your daughter to school in the morning, put her on the bus, and have no right to know what is happening to her in school in terms of her health care. Once she's at school, they could ship her off to Planned Parenthood to get an abortion, send her off to the doctor for other things, or to a counselor who tells her how awful all of your Christian beliefs are. And you, as a parent, would have absolutely no right or means to be able to find out what happened to her under current Oregon law. And these kinds of attacks, both education on our kids and also on the broader family, these are the things I think that lead to socialism, because, again, you're taking away the individual rights and you're letting society dictate to those kids how the state believes they ought to think and feel.
Yeah, and you're right. This is again aimed at destructionism. This is the destruction of the family, destroying the first of all the marriage relationship and the faith, courage, and fidelity that happens between a man and a woman when they pledge to commit themselves for life. That is, you know, started in the 60s, you know, 50s and 60s. We're going to make, you know, divorce more acceptable because you just kind of need to move on. And then came the free love in the 70s, and the free love led to, you know, more marijuana, drugs, and alcohol and whatever. These things might all be okay, but there's no barriers. So without barriers, my religious background, a biblical understanding of Christianity, I've got barriers. I'm very libertarian oriented, but I've got sideboards on my little red wagon so I don't fall out. And those sideboards that create the safety net for my family and my life is a biblical worldview and a biblical perspective. Without having this deeper understanding, everybody makes up their own mind with their own reasons and their own agenda, and they can justify it with any number of fabulous words about gender equality and oppression and whatnot.
Right.
But what we really have to do is get back to some transcendent understanding of what it means to be a human with dignity in life.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break. Coming up, we'll be drilling down on attacks on the economy. Guess what? You're living it. Stay with us. We'll have more of Senator Dennis Lithcom. And welcome back. We're talking with State Senator Dennis Lithcom about socialism's attacks here on Oregonians. Because it's a slow, steady drip, you might not be aware of it happening right in front of your eyes. We just wrapped up talking about some of socialist attacks on society. The one thing we didn't cover, though, I'll just add real quick, is that crime, of course, is a huge thing right now. In fact, crime has gotten so bad in Democrat-run cities that major cities like New York, Los Angeles, and others aren't even bothering to report their violent crime statistics anymore. So, that's really just great. So, Dennis, I'd like to switch now and focus on economics as well, and then later we'll hit the environment and healthcare. And looking around, I can't think of a better example of how not to run an economy than what's going on right now. I mean, it is literally cratering all around us. The latest measures on inflation, the PPI and CPI, came out on Thursday. They were both double what was projected. Prices are way up, 20, 30, or even 40% in some cases. Real wages are down under Biden. Recently, Walmart, Macy's, Target, and others canceled billions of dollars in orders heading into Christmas. And, of course, all of the other issues that presents down the line. Intel is being handed billions of dollars of free money from taxpayers through the CHIPS Act, and yet they just announced they are canceling thousands of jobs. So what gets me, though, is you look around at this shambles, and yet there are still people out there who think a socialist economy is a good thing.
Right. And, you know, that's part of this entire bucket that we've got that we're kind of walking through. When you destroy a family's ability to afford their housing. If you look at a graph, Mish Talk had a graphic recently about housing prices, and they're currently going down a little. But if you look at a graph, if you go back 15 years, housing was affordable. Diane and I came to Oregon 25 years ago. Housing was affordable. It's no longer affordable because of this destructionist mentality. The mentality that comes from central planners and the conceit that they carry that they know best and they can tell you what they need to do in the community to keep the grass green, to keep the rivers flowing, to keep, you know, the trees growing, et cetera. And yet every year we lose water resources because we don't have enough reservoirs. We've talked about global warming and yet nobody's building reservoirs. Why isn't anybody building reservoirs? Because they can't get them permitted. And then you can't cut a tree. And so rather than cut a tree We would allow five in my county last summer. We had almost 1 million acres go up in flames, 1 million acres in counties within my district specifically. That's a ton of timber. That's a ton of carbon resources that are all getting wasted. And all of this is happening and causing prices, replacement costs, cost opportunity costs to go through the roof. And so right now, families are being destroyed by the fiscal implications of no drilling, no natural gas, tear out the dams, no dams. On and on down the line as you go, the price of living in this so-called socialist utopia of the United States of America is getting worse and worse. And it's really dangerous for people to continue to think government can save them, because government doesn't have any resources unless it first takes those resources from someone else.
Exactly. And I think you raise an important point there, is that under socialist economies, things always end up costing more. And your jobs and your wages never keep pace with the inflation, because government is busy taking from you to give to somebody else, which means you have less every time you turn around, because the government is spending so much on all of these other issues. So what are you seeing here in Oregon specifically? Is there anything coming out of the legislatures right now that is really driving some of the economic forces going on here in Oregon?
Well, the things that are driving Oregon, mostly it's Governor Kate Brown's lousy policies. She is graded on an F scale at the Cato Institute's website. The left coast, California's Governor Newsom, Washington Inslee, Governor Kate Brown, along with Michigan and Illinois and New Jersey, all of these states that we know have had problems with their pension funds and with their budgets, we're seeing that same thing here in Oregon under the Democrat rule. And this is the problem with one-party rule. People think that socialism might sound great or look great, or the some strong man could solve our problems. But here, what we see in Oregon is we're clearly going downhill under one-party rule. The climate protection and the green energy bills, these things have been put in place not through the legislative body because there wasn't enough consensus. They've been put in place because the governor is channeling her own desires through the directors of these various agencies. Right. And this is socialism on steroids. This is really bad news.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's always the problem with big government. The big problem with big government running big business is too much of it is about rewarding your friends, your donors, and your political allies while punishing your competition on all of those levels. You know, as a result, you will never get good economic policies because they're not actually concerned about the economy. They're concerned with rewarding themselves and their allies. And that's certainly what you see with green energy and the whole market transformation that's happened there in terms of short-circuiting so many of the normal market dynamics in order to push this through, all because somebody has decided that this is the right way to go. And we haven't proven that. In fact, with the green energy, with energy, the lack thereof, they're trying to push all these electrical vehicles on us. We don't have the infrastructure for that. We wouldn't have it for 20 years. And yet they're already out there banning these cars and trucks that run on gas.
Yeah. And the news media, aside from your show here today, the news media is failing us in no uncertain terms. The Twitterati, the Google, Facebook gang, and the printed media, they are failing us on every front. I recommend your listeners watch Mr. Jones. It's a movie that's available on Prime Video. So it's an Amazon company, but nevertheless, Mr. Jones is a fabulous look into the Stalin era and the Ukrainian starvation that happened, because Stalin was a central planner who could not run the economy as well as the family farms. Ukraine was known as the Stalin's field of gold. Mm-hmm. Because it produced so much wheat. And he destroyed that and also destroyed the lives of 30 or 40 million people. Yep. This is a great look into journalistic failure tacitly, you know, pursuing their own rewards while helping this dictator destroy the lives of millions of normal people, people who were living in the country in rural parts of the Ukraine.
Yeah, and that's the crazy thing about socialism is you elect people who don't know how to run your business, but you're giving them legal control over your business. All right, let's go and take a break. We'll have more with Senator Dennis Lithcomb. We've been talking about the economical wasteland and coming up, socialist attacks on the environment. Welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking about socialism today and how it is sabotaging Oregon. We've covered attacks on society and the economy, and now let's talk attacks on the environment. We're talking with Senator Dennis Lithcomb, who is from the Klamath Falls area, which has been under attack on environmental laws for decades. Dennis, you are certainly front and center as far as attacks on using the environment to attack an area and attack society and all the businesses within that. So what are some of the things that you see personally happening down there in the Klamath Falls area?
You know, there's the dam removal effort. There's the, you know, this area at one time was the highest per capita income county in the state of Oregon because of timber resources and using every facet of a tree, you know, processing the bark, processing every bit of chip or sawdust that comes out of a tree and whatnot, and creating fiber board and laminated timber and all of those things, plywood and whatnot. And so the timber industry is an important industry, and the left and their environmental causes has destroyed more acres of forest than any plywood processing plant in the county. And it's just a mindset that just doesn't know how to figure out pro from con, efficiency from inefficiency, appropriate return on investment versus inappropriate. I'm 40 miles from the nearest gas station. So my house is, you know, really 36, but I'll round up to 40 to make it sound dramatic. 40 miles from the nearest gas station. So by the time you go to town and back, you've done 80 miles out of your tank. And I don't have electricity coming into our house from the utility, so I don't get a monthly bill. And I would have to not only set aside the power that I gain from the sunshine and store into batteries, and it's really only 80% efficient because I've got all this infrastructure that sits there 24 hours a day, but the sun doesn't shine 24 hours a day. So all of that infrastructure investment, these panels, these poles, these wires, they only work for 5 hours every single summer day here in Oregon, 4 hours during every day and in the wintertime. And so during that 4 hours, I have to have this excess capacity to gather enough sunshine to stuff it into the batteries where I lose 20%. And then you're somehow expecting me to be able to put that into an electric vehicle that would really only get to town and halfway back home before I'd be out of juice on a cold morning with the heater and fan blowing. And this just doesn't make sense. It's ludicrous. It's idiocy. The grid, even if I were on the grid cannot support the kind of infrastructure demands that the thousands and thousands of vehicles that Governor Newsom and Governor Brand and Governor Brown want to put in place, because we feel so good about using coal power to charge our cars overnight. This is ridiculous. They're talking about tearing out the Klamath dams. 168 megawatts of electricity comes out of those three dams, and they would rather blow those dams and turn the river into a summer, you know, wasteland, because the rivers don't flow full stream all year long. They dry out during the summer months.
Yeah.
And so there's all of these wrong-headed ideals that are being pushed on little school children, much like the gender equality and, you know, the phobias associated with what it means to use your own rational resources to determine efficiency, appropriate use, what you want out of your life, your hard work, your math skills, and your science skills. We refuse to let people believe that. We'll instead tell them the lie. And now in Oregon, under Governor Brown's direction, you don't even need to get grades, quote, to graduate. Right, you just do your 12 years and they
just show up and they hand you a piece of paper that says congrats on it. And
congrats.
That's about it.
Now,
you know, I think you raise a really important point there when it comes to environmental stewardship, is that when you lose the individual economic incentive to do better, to do things more efficiently, things will always get worse. And that's what you see in socialist countries, because what you're essentially doing is you're saying one bureaucrat will decide what tens of thousands of people will do versus tens of thousands of people all working towards improving themselves. And the first, the former part of that situation where you've got one bureaucrat controlling tens of thousands or millions, that will never be as efficient as all of those people doing the best for themselves. And so that's why socialism always inevitably fails.
And that's exactly what the Wealth of Nations and, you know, Adam Smith was about. He wrote about the invisible hand, and his claim wasn't that necessarily that it's God who's doing all these things, but it's your effort and my effort leads to benefits that impact everybody. First, our own families, our wives and our kids, etc. But then as they benefit, they also contribute. Sure. And then their siblings contribute and their children contribute.
It's just this snowballing effect where everybody is working to improve themselves, and that improves society. Rather than the reverse of that, which is society can never improve the same way that individuals do. All right, let's go and take a break there. Coming up, we're going to be talking about healthcare and how this is certainly creeping up here in Oregon. Stay with us. More with Senator Dennis Lutkin. And welcome back. We're talking about socialism today on the iSpire Radio Show. We're doing that with Senator Dennis Lutkin. So far, we have covered societal attacks by socialism. We've talked about economics. We've talked about the attacks on the environment. And now we're going to move into healthcare. And Dennis, this is not a surprise that this is a dream of socialists everywhere, is to have nationalized healthcare, which is just a horrifying thing when you actually look at it. There are so many examples of how nationalized healthcare has just simply failed. And now we are literally trying to codify this here in Oregon. This is not a surprise. It shouldn't be a surprise, because HB 3650, which granted CCOs their monopolies and everything else, right on the first page, in the first paragraph, it says that the goal of the legislative intent here is to create universal access to healthcare. And so this year on the ballot, Measure 111 will codify universal healthcare as a constitutional right here in Oregon. I think this is incredibly dangerous that this is the direction we're heading. And yet this is, as I say, the dream of socialists everywhere.
Yeah, you know, healthcare socialism or socialist healthcare, you know, universal healthcare, however you want to, you know, encapsulate it, is really the most fiscally explosive entitlement program you could ever dream of. With $1 billion that Biden is sending to Oregon to experiment on expanding Medicaid, you know, we have the same problem. What we have is that corrosion of individual responsibility and financial accountability. You would make choices if you had to pay for it. If you don't have to pay for it, you won't bother to make that choice. I don't have to care about costs. I'm just going to do what I'm going to do. And it drives up demand, because I can go to the doctor for anything. I don't have to control my own appetite, whether I'm a hypochondriac or not. I don't have to control my appetite for going to the doctor's office. That sounds funny, like people don't really want to go to the doctor's office, but clearly they do. They lined up for vaccinations, which is that supplanted collective sense of public health that came from the official banter coming out of Fauci's CDC and the FDA at all. They engineered this entire thing to push mRNA vaccines or inoculations on the public, and the public was more than willing to do it, partly through coercion and partly because they didn't know what else to do. So we've already lost touch. The public has lost touch with their own sense of well-being and health and what they should do to stay healthy, and they just follow the rules. If you and I go out on the street in Salem, we will see young teenagers, I would say 12-year-old, 14-year-olds, typically girls, wearing masks still. And they've been trained now that they'll be safe if they wear a mask. And first of all, it's not even true. We know social distancing was a lie. Bricks told us that. We know that the inoculations don't stop transmission and then don't stop you from catching the disease. Fauci told us that. Pfizer just told us, oh, by the way, they never even tested it on transmission. And so somebody's been telling us all along that these are safe and effective, but they effectively do nothing except for maybe inject an artificial spike protein into the human genome. Nobody knows what that's going to look like in 5 or 10 years. And the public has been snookered, and these guys continue down this socialist mindset. Yeah. All sectors of financial transfers, especially these for healthcare, because they put through the microphones that this is more important than anything, and it's more important to them in their power mode because it's so destructive of the human family and personal decision making.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was banned on Twitter for tweeting about Benford's Law. It's a statistical analysis that shows that that has been used to prove voter fraud in some situations. And eventually I had to take that down in order to get on to say goodbye. But then a few months afterwards, they then banned me yet again because I had a post from years ago that said the answer to so many problems in nationalized healthcare is let the old people die. And it's true. That's really what nationalized healthcare systems do, is they let the weak and infirm and the old all die, and hopefully as soon as possible. And that sounds really cruel, but that's what's going on right now. In fact, if you look across the border in Canada, when they authorized euthanasia and assisted suicide, it has expanded. They have been there are now, in fact, even the AP of the Associated Press is looking at this, saying, "Gosh, they're actually using this to eliminate expensive people. You know, people that have various problems." It is now the sixth leading cause of death in Canada. You look across the pond there to UK and their nationalized healthcare system. The waiting list to get access to healthcare has now topped 7 million for the first time. In other words, 1 in 8 people in England are waiting for healthcare treatments. You're now faced with situations where you could wait up to 8 hours for an ambulance. If you're having a heart attack, they're saying, don't wait for the ambulance, get somebody else to drive you. That's nationalized healthcare. That's where they're taking us. Why would anyone want to go there?
Yeah, you ask, you know, the fundamental question, and it's because the political class, the elites, know that they will not be held accountable. Look at the nefarious actions that have happened, within the last, 8 years let's make it 14 years. We'll include the last the Obama administration, will include the Trump administration, will include the Biden administration, and look at these things that have happened because there's this overwhelming desire for somebody to bail us out. Yeah. And at some point, we need to be stressing the opportunity to give men and women the faith and the courage, the vision to stand tall, to earn their wages, and to work hard and dream about building a better life.
Right, and the ability to take care of themselves. You know, when it comes to nationalized healthcare, death panels aren't a conspiracy theory, they're a necessary feature.
That's a great quote. I'm going to use it.
Well, yes, we do need to take a break. Coming up, we'll finish up with Senator Dennis Lithcomb. Coming up, we'll be talking about Republican solutions. Stay with us. And welcome back in our final segment now here with Senator Dennis Lithicum. We've been talking about socialism's attacks on Oregon, and I really like to focus now on this final segment, some Republican solutions. And so, Dennis, let's start there with so many societal issues going on. What would Republicans do differently if they were in charge?
Good question. Here's what I know the public wants Republicans to do. They want the Republicans to stand firm on some of these definitive things with regard to education, allowing families and parents and moms and dads to be engaged in curriculum, to say, put a thumbs down to some, you know, leftist rant that's happening within their classrooms and whatever. They want to be able to control the life and education of their children and be right there, Johnny on the spot. They also have really been discouraged by this, quote, equity falsification instead of thinking that we can make everybody equal just by, you know, a law, quote, boom, you're now all equal. And it's like, well, wait, it doesn't really work like that. No. Different people have different skills, and those different skill sets are part of what contributes to Adam Smith's invisible hand. Yeah. You have skill sets that earn for your family. I have skill sets that earn for my family. We should both be excelling in those arenas and passing that on to our heritage.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the other thing within societal issues is the notion of education. And of course, there's the school choice ballot initiative that will be coming up in 2024. But I think legislatively, you know, if we did that at that level, we wouldn't even need that ballot initiative. So that would be something else that Republicans could be doing differently there. What about economics? How would Republicans be running this state differently?
I think what you see from the Taxpayer Association of Oregon is you see how Tina Kotek and Governor Brown and the Democrat-led legislator, the one-party rule in their central planning perspective, has done nothing but pad their own pockets.
Right.
They've got a polluted perspective of what it means to actually provide goods and services to the public for things that they need. And instead of solving those problems, they're busy creating other problems that then they want to rush in and solve. The housing issue lies really at the feet of the Democrat Party. Their code regulations and restrictions on land use at all, and the fundamental problems with the economics of limiting where you can live and how you can live in those things. Those all drive up the cost of housing. And then we ask, why is housing so expensive? And then we go about solving the housing problem by building these complexes or, you know, multifamily units where each unit costs essentially $80,000 a piece.
Yeah.
It's like, well, this is the most expensive public housing I've ever seen. And that's the nature of socialism. Everything gets more expensive because there's no price constraints.
Sure.
There's no reasonable answers.
Yeah. And that's really the problem is that when it comes to economics with socialism, it's that constant government interference. Socialism is when the government has more control over your business than you do. And we certainly saw that with COVID. So, and what about the environment? What would Republicans be doing differently, environmentally speaking?
Well, environmentally, the key thing would be to kind of deregulate the business enterprise. Everybody's so afraid of some business somewhere doing something that would, quote, hurt the environment. And they never think about the other end of the equation. It's the difference between what's seen and what's unseen. And the bureaucracy keeps pointing out all of these things and exaggerating them, for example, climate change or global warming, whatever you're going to call it this week. And they never talk about the benefits of our culture, our society, the benefits of travel, the benefits that you have and the freedom that you have to utilize your car or truck for whatever business you right. want to engage in. You never see the positives of any of these things.
No.
You only see the negatives.
That's right. And I think you nailed it, is that the fear is that some business somewhere might hurt the environment. And that's how they control business. Through environmental regulations. So finally, healthcare. What would Republicans be doing differently on that end?
Well, I think you have to go back to promoting the individual, promoting individual health, promoting personal health. It's not a mass lineup for everybody to get inoculated with some newfangled medicine. It's the right diagnosis at the right time with the right prescription under your own private doctor who's the one you have a relationship with, and he can advise you and get your informed consent without jamming legislation down the throats of the public at large. We should not have this massive butterfly net where we're trying to capture more and more individuals to funnel them into this healthcare environment like you described, where you will be on a waiting list for 8 hours for the next ambulance. Right. This is no direction for the state of Oregon to go.
No.
And we need to stop it right now. Yes. By electing individuals who will contribute to our common good.
Yep, absolutely. We need to stop forcing people to pay for someone else's health care. It's not free if somebody else is paying for it. And also, we need to get back to this notion of personal responsibility. You will handle your own health differently if you're responsible. Dennis, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time today.
You bet. It's always fun. Next time, we'll do 2 or 3 hours, okay?
Sounds good. News on Friday saw Virginia Democrat Elizabeth Guzman trying to reintroduce a bill that would expand the state's definition of child abuse and neglect to include parents who do not affirm their child's gender identity or sexual orientation. She wants to replace the role of parents with government. And there it is. Socialists wanting to turn society on its head, where children have rights, where parents do not. And that started right here in Oregon with Kitzhaber's grand healthcare transformation, which removed parents' rights to know what was happening to their children in school. They try it here before they unleash it there. Elected Democrats have made a mess of everything everywhere because they have stopped pretending they're Democrats and have demanded socialism instead. They won't change until they are driven from every office possible. Ballots are dropping soon, and this year it's simple. On the front of the ballot, vote for every Republican candidate. Don't leave any blank. On the back of the ballot, vote no on everything. Don't bother reading the deceptive ballot titles for those initiatives. They were all written by Democrats. Just vote no. We won't defeat socialism by sitting it out. So take action, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.